Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon on a kind of a chilly Wednesday, but we're going to be warm here in the studio because we have two people who are going to help us accomplish that. I know the guys are upstairs in the furnace room thinking about what to do next once they get some good advice from these guys. First of all, Chuck Renfro is from the Alaska Craftsman Home Program. He's the executive director and the president. Tell us a little bit about the program and how you acquired two titles there.
Well, we couldn't find anybody else that wanted to take the job. So I managed to volunteer for the executive director position, and I've been president of the board for several years. And the program was first initiated back in the late 80s, 87, 88. And it's one of these programs that has been around for so long, I think everybody seems to recognize it. Mm-hmm. We've taught a lot of courses in energy-efficient construction over the years. Part of our program is to help residential endorsement builders become qualified for the state contractor's license in order for them to test for the state license. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, I guess.
And we'll be talking a lot more about that. Also here in the studio is Michael Packard. He is the Housing Rehabilitation Coordinator for the Municipality of Anchorage. And I guess, tell us about that.
Well, the municipality has a weatherization program that's gone on for quite a while.
Uh-huh. And this is something people are probably pretty familiar with if they've lived here very long.
Oh, I would think so. It's in the past, it's been a low-income program. Mm-hmm. But we've, since the increase in money from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, who gives us our money, mm-hmm. it's now more of a median income program. So we're helping a lot more people.
Yeah, that's good. I noticed in looking at some of the statistics that are available on the internet that there are programs pretty much available in all 50 states, and they all have varying degrees of income threshold. And some are very generous, and others, for various reasons, are not. And mm-hmm. ours is pretty good.
Right. Well, part of the problem, part of the situation with that is we have a state who gives us a fair amount of money and adds to Department of Energy has a program that is nationwide. And if that's all you're using is their money, then you don't have nearly as much as we do. Mm-hmm. We're pretty lucky in that respect.
Anyway, today we're talking about weatherization issues and dealing with your home through these cold temperature months. If you have questions or comments, give us a call. If you're listening in the afternoon, it is a live call-in program. Our number is 550-8433 or outside. Our toll-free is 1-888-353-5752. And you can also email at communityforum@kska.org. My guest today from the Municipality of Anchorage and Alaska Craftsman Home Program. So we've got all kinds of information to get out to you and some questions that have already been emailed in. So hang in there, and I hope you give us a call. If you're listening at night, don't forget you can't call in because the program has been pre-recorded. I saw that there are a lot of things coming out on the market, it seems like, this year, as I guess probably in other years, maybe I've just noticed more this year, that help people with, you know, heating issues in their homes. I noticed there are some things that seem to magically heat your home, but they don't get hot, or, you know, stuff I've never heard of before. Are these things, how do you make sure that these are reliable, Chuck, and make sure that they're a good product to purchase?
A heating unit that doesn't get hot.
Mm-hmm. It's a fireplace design, and it doesn't say anything about the mechanics of it or the chemistry of it or the what's similar to chemistry, geophysics or whatever that would make it heat your home without getting hot, without a cat could sit on top of it.
Well, what I suspect you're talking about, maybe the electric heaters that are on the market now that are becoming more and more popular.
Mm-hmm.
They have an electric heater that's got several different manufacturers, and they're up in the $200 to $400 range in price. But they're really an electric heater that puts out approximately 1,500 watts of heat. They're driven by 1,500 watts of electricity.
Wow.
And the same heater can be purchased at any of the local small box or big box stores that does the same output for $20 to $30
mm-hmm.
or $20 to $50. So it's a good heater. It's an electric heater. And electricity is pretty much recognized as one of our most expensive energy sources.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they're a very good heater and they look nice, some of them have a little flame-looking scenario on them, and they do put out, 1,500 watts of energy, and they work fine. That's just that they're pretty expensive to operate.
Okay.
They're all 100% efficient.
And, Mike, how can you make sure that they are efficient? Is there some way you can look on a box when you're purchasing one of these and say, when you go into a purchase a refrigerator, it says, this appliance will cost you approximately $56 a year. How can you find out?
The important thing is to look for the Energy Star rating.
Okay.
Gives you a good idea. As far as those heaters, I think the entire hype of the heater is you shut off your whole furnace to your house and then heat one room. That's where they're getting the savings.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I guess we should be careful. I wanted to find out, we had a good question from from Terry on the email, and Terry wants to know a question that I had wondered about. How do you test the fireplace flue for air leakage, and if the flue is leaking, does it need to be replaced by a professional?
I would ask the question, is she talking about the flue or is she talking about the damper?
Is the damper the one that you can
damper,
open or close?
That's correct.
Okay. I think it might be the damper.
The only way to find out if it's leaking is to crawl down there and take a look at it. You can take a smoke-producing device and when it's closed and see if you still have smoke going up the chimney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're always going to have some bypass.
Mm-hmm.
But if you crawl down there and take a look at it and it's completely warped and won't close, then yeah, it needs to be changed.
And does that need to be done professionally?
Well, a damper, if it's broken, it's a manufactured fireplace, you might want to consider having someone fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, many fireplaces don't have a tight-fitting damper.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have a lot of bypass leakage. So one good way to test it is just to stand in front of it when it's cold. If you feel cold air falling on the floor, then you know you've got an issue with your, mm-hmm. your fireplace damper. In order to repair a flue, sometimes there is air leakage around the outside of the flue.
I guess we sort of said damper and flue, so what's the difference? The damper is the one you can open and close on, and then
the
flue is what?
The flue is the hole. It's the pipe that goes to the sky.
Okay.
That gets the products of combustion out of the house.
Okay.
And the damper is what stops the air leakage through there when the fireplace is cold. Or whenever it's not burning. You don't want any air leakage there at that point. So it's tough to say what she's got by her email here.
Mm-hmm.
But I would think that if she could improve her damper or make, in some cases you might be able to put in a glass door or something on that order.
Mm-hmm.
Or the ideal solution to a situation like that would maybe to put in a gas insert as a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will totally seal that fireplace up completely so you don't have any air leakage to the outside. And then the gas unit would be a sealed combustion unit.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need any oxygen from the house to burn. So that's a pretty good energy efficient improvement there.
What about the aspect, though, of wanting to be independent of gas or electricity? I mean, if you wanted to keep that wood fireplace going, are there any efficient models for that as far as fireplaces?
Well, they do have efficient wood burning equipment on the market. For the most part, what we used to tell folks is to get a mobile home fireplace or a mobile home approved wood stove because they have combustion air directly into the firebox, and it takes most of its combustion air out directly from the outside. So you don't have that extreme amount of heat loss when these things aren't burning.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one way to look at it. You know, there's a lot of different types of fire equipment on the market, wood-burning boilers, wood-burning fireplaces, masonry heaters that, you know, weigh 20,000 pounds or so and put out an extreme amount of heat. So there's a big spectrum out there.
And we'll be talking more about those in just a few minutes, but we're going to go to the phones. Don't forget, if you're listening and if you have any questions or comments, we're talking about weatherization today. And our phone number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or toll-free 1-888-353-5752. Diane on line 7, welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a couple of topics I hope you will talk about, and I can take the answers off the air. One is the CO meters. I think that they're, the ones you can buy are set to go off after you've been in like 35 parts per million for 8 hours. I believe that's actually an industrial rating, and that's pretty high, and I don't think that would be acceptable around kids. Are there any out there that you can program to be more sensitive? And also fans, you know, if you have a vaulted ceiling and then people say, well, put a fan up there and make force the air back down. Except I'm really not sure which way the blade should be tipped if you have one that can, you know, be changed so that the air is actually going down there. And really, what's the trade-off? If it's electric, then anything, if it's slow, you know, really, is there a savings?
Mm-hmm.
And then can you also talk about air? How much fresh air is too much? How much is too little? I had an energy rating, and it seemed like both things were said. What's the optimal? How do you determine it?
Okay, let's see. Do we want to do CO meters, and who can be our CO meter expert? Looks like Michael, you've won.
Yeah, there are other CO meters that actually are very, very sensitive and will go off at very small amount. They're quite expensive, however. If she'd like to call the office, I could get a name for her, or she could go online perhaps and look it up.
Okay, and that would be at the Municipality of Anchorage.
That's correct.
Weatherization program, and there you are. Okay, fans. That's actually a question that I have also, because a lot of homes now, you walk into the house and there's a huge vaulted ceiling, probably both stories of the home, and then the living area is off to the back and there's two levels, and somewhere in the house there's a thermostat, and it may or may not be near that giant area of air that comes in the door whenever it's open. And so you feel like, at least in some homes I know, it seems like the first floor is very cool, and the second floor where the thermostat is pretty warm. How can you deal with that? Is a fan a solution to that problem, Chuck?
Well, a fan can be helpful. You're talking about a ceiling paddle type fan.
Yeah.
And they can be helpful. And they're more popular in cooling climates. If you go down in South 48, you'll find a lot of, you know, most homes have two or three of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I understand whether they should be blowing down or up. In my case, I always blow the fan down in a heating climate. So we're pushing the warm air off the ceiling and de-stratifying the ceiling,
mm-hmm.
and trying to displace the cold air on the floor. So I would think in that light, I'm not an expert on the fan issues, but I think that I would push the heated air down to the floor.
Mm-hmm. Michael, how would you know, I guess the fan blows in the direction it's aimed at.
That's right.
So
turn it on, and if it's blowing down, then that's where it's going.
All right. Let's see here. And then how much fresh air is too much or too little? And I'm not sure if this is an in-home issue. I know There is the air that comes in your garage that brings fresh air into...
It's pretty much based on where your appliances are and if you have enough combustion air for your appliances. And the fresh air in your house is based on the amount of people in the house, the number of bedrooms, the mm-hmm. volume of air in the house.
And how do you find that out? And how do you, like, can you, is there someone you can call and say, come and check my fresh air?
Probably call either one of us for that issue. But mm-hmm. There's an ASHRAE standard for indoor air quality or indoor air ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
And you can refer to that. It's available at the library, or you can purchase the manual. And it's a fairly simple, they've simplified it in the last go-around, and it's a formula mm-hmm. for the amount of the ventilation air you need in your home.
Okay.
And it's about a third of an air change per hour is what you want to kind of consider when you're putting in a ventilation system. We always feel that a mechanical ventilation system is appropriate. You don't want to rely on Mother Nature to give you an air exchange in your home. So a mechanical ventilation system should be set up and sized appropriately for your house.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know if you have one or not?
Most homes don't have them. There's very few homes that have a mechanical ventilation system.
I don't think I have one.
It can be as simple as a bathroom fan that's set up and controlled properly with a timer or a dehumidistat or something on that order, or it can be as complicated as a heat recovery ventilation system, which is, you know, certainly recognized as the more, I guess, the Cadillac of the group.
Mm-hmm. And so what's that piece of stovepipe sticking out the side of my garage?
Is it just an air inlet?
I believe it is. The furnace and the water heater are in the garage.
So you have a combustion air opening. And that's a requirement to make sure you have adequate combustion air so your furnace can burn appropriate amount of oxygen.
Mm-hmm. Can it be providing too much air? I mean, like, it's really cold sometimes.
In most cases, no.
Okay.
In most cases, if you don't have enough combustion air, then you get what is called backdrafting. The furnace and the water heater require a certain amount of air. And if they can't get that air, they will get it from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a big enough opening, it will pull it down the chimney if necessary. And if it does that, then it also brings carbon monoxide into your house.
Eek. Okay, let's move on now to Steve on line 4. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question about the two different programs for weatherization. I was trying to figure out whether I should apply to the municipal weatherization program or to the one run by AHFC. We do. My family does qualify for under the income guidelines for the weatherization one, but I was just trying to figure out which gives us access to more money, more weatherization upgrades, and also have a question about lead paint and what's the best way to test for that in an old home. Thanks.
Okay, Michael.
Let's start with the lead paint first. You can go to almost any environmental company, and they will come out and test for lead paint. If you have a house that was built prior to 78, the possibility is that it does have lead paint. We do a lot of lead testing. Every house that is 78 or prior to that, we test for lead. I would say maybe 25% have lead, maybe less.
And if you can you ever just cover it up, or do you have to get rid of it, or what?
The problem with lead in paint is the dust. So if you have children and the child is chewing on a windowsill that has lead in it, that child will ingest lead.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do some remodel work and you're tearing it up and you're using a sander in, you're putting lead dust in the air if you have lead in your paint.
So
if it is not disturbed, it causes no harm.
So if you have kids, probably...
You better be paying attention to your kids.
Scrape the heck out of your walls, or what? Replace all your wallboard, or
I don't think that's necessary. I think you need to pay attention if you have.
Don't let them chew on your walls.
Yeah, if you have some extra coats of paint over the top of that lead, you're a little better off. But mm-hmm. you know, if you're worried about it, then have a lead test done.
Okay. And Chuck, any comments, Steve also wanted to know about where he could get the most resources for his home.
Well, there's a, on the rebate program, that's the second program that he was referring to, I believe. The rebate program, there's no income requirements. The only requirement there is that you own your own and occupy your own home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's up to a $10,000 rebate available on that program for energy improvements, and it's got some caveats, and I could explain that possibly, but that's a maximum amount you can get. On the weatherization program, and I'm certainly going to let Mike talk about that a little more because he's in that program, and I'm into the rebate program, but they have a little bit more a different flexibility there, and there's a time frame on both programs to get to you.
Mm-hmm.
So
the weatherization program right now, we have a pretty good sized backlog, and I would say if he wants it done right away, then he probably should go with the rebate program. I think our waiting list is probably people who are just coming online now. Could be a year and a half out before they get work done because mm-hmm. we have such a backlog of clients right now.
It seems to me like last year we came into a horrendous fear of utility bills. Is there any hope that this... I also noticed in the statistics that are national that almost all programs have a wait list and some it's quite considerable. Is there any chance that Alaska, that more money might be pumped in by HFC or someone to eliminate some of that backlog? I mean, Anchorage being the largest city.
They've pumped quite a bit of money in, and the municipality is ramping up as we speak, mm-hmm. hiring more people to do more work to do it faster.
So now, when you talk about weatherization, you're doing... one thing they do in, I think it's New York, which is the location of the lovely Fort Drum, which is the other cold weather test site for the Army, in addition to, I think, what used to be over by Delta Greeley.
Greeley.
Mm-hmm. But they have a weatherization kit that they give out to people that includes a number of objects. And through their state power authority, they give out 20,000 to 30,000 of them, and they spend like $5 million on this program. But they give out caulking, weather stripping, and door sweeps, shrink to fit window kits, compact fluorescent bulbs, and an LED nightlight fixture, a hot water temperature gauge and refrigerator thermometer, let's see, low-flow showerhead and faucet aerators and a radon testing information. Is this anything like this available here in Alaska? Or
I'm sure it's all available. I don't know that it's something that is
free.
An organization hands out as, mm-hmm. as a giveaway. I mean, the $10,000 rebate or $10,000 or $15,000 weatherization is a pretty good bonus for folks to have. It's just that the programs are so popular that everybody's wanting to participate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know in Anchorage, I heard there was somewhere around 6,000 people on a waiting list for the rebate program, which is somewhat similar to the year and a half wait to become eligible for the weather, or waiting in line for the weatherization program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very popular. We're hoping naturally that the state legislature may opt to put more funding in this on the next session. That's a, it's a fond hope, I guess you could say. They originally put in $300 million with an additional $60 million, $200 million allocated to weatherization, and $160 million allocated to weatherization or to rebate.
Mm-hmm.
So if, that on the rebate side, that's expected maybe to last till next June. And then that fund will be used mm-hmm. up, and hopefully we'll get more funding for that because it's a very popular program and everybody wins on this program.
Just for clarification now, can you give me like a quick comparison of the two? I know we've sort of talked about it, but not really, between weatherization and rebate.
Weatherization, an individual like myself will go into a house We will assess it, looking at everything, and then do a weatherization work on it, and it costs the homeowner nothing. You know, they're inconvenienced just as they are if they have a contractor come in and do the work.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't cost them anything. They have to qualify income-wise. And when we do go to those people's houses, they do get compact fluorescent light bulbs, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We give those out as well.
And they would know before the assessment was done whether or not they qualified for the program. That would already be done.
Before the assessment ever happened, they would have to qualify.
Okay. And then the rebate program, Chuck?
Well, the rebate program, the major difference, I guess, if there is any, the homeowner has to have what we call an as-is energy rating prior to doing any energy upgrades that would qualify for the program. He has the option of doing the work himself, hiring a contractor of his choice. So it would be they have a little more control over who does the work and how the work is done,
mm-hmm.
and they can choose what they want to do. On the and I'm assuming on the weatherization program that the upgrades are based on what the weatherization program determines that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, and it's all based on a priority list that is set out for us by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
And so, Chuck, as far as the rebate program is concerned, do they get reimbursed, or you cover up to, let's see, what did you say earlier?
$10,000.
Yeah. They can get pre-funding through a loan program that Alaska Housing has initiated for this program. There's up to $30,000 available as a loan. It's a fairly low interest rate and fairly simple loan program. And so they can actually pre-finance this and get the work done. And then when they get what they call the post rating, then any of that funding could go back to repay that loan.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they're not going to get a dollar for dollar. If you get maybe a $4,000 rebate, if you qualify for that, very often you're going to be spending more than $4,000 to qualify for that amount of money. So there's some out-of-pocket expense for this. There's no doubt on that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know what those are? Somebody will tell you, or...?
Well, you will get an energy rating, and the energy rating will tell you what you could gain, approximately how many points or whatever level you may attain by doing certain upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they call an options report, so you can analyze that option report and determine what you want to do to your own home.
Mm-hmm.
And then pick and choose what you want to do. And then, you know, you'll have some sort of an estimate on what you're going to gain.
Okay. And I want to talk about those energy ratings a little more. But first, let's pick up Roger on line 8. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Hi, thanks. I've got a question real quick. My wife and I own some property way up on the upper hillside there. We're planning on building our, essentially our permanent house, you know, that we'll be in for the next 20 or 30 years. And I'm trying to figure out the most efficient way to heat it. And I was looking at a geothermal system and wondering, is that even feasible that far up the hillside? And secondly, is it economically a smart idea for the long term?
Chuck.
Yeah, I can talk to that. There are actual geothermal systems working up on the high hillside in Anchorage and have been in for a number of years, at least 10 years, maybe 12. So that type of technology is doable, and I sort of have a bit of a conflict of interest because I install that type of system myself. So I do that type of work, and I really try to promote it because it is really, once you get it in and stabilized with the extra capital cost involved, it is the most efficient way to heat your home.
Mm-hmm. And is
okay, and that would be a geothermal, and then you have, I from what I understand, you have some sort of a supplemental to that, i.e. A gas furnace that supplements the geothermal. Is that right?
Well, that's a strategy you use when you design your system, you know, because they are a high capital cost investment, although there is a relatively short payback period on them. But, yeah, it would pay to have some sort of a supplemental system to help get you over the rough spots in the extreme cold days of winter. And that would just slow down.
Five or 10 year break even time frame?
Yeah, from 5 to 10 years should be about adequate on that. It depends on our utility costs and that sort of thing. If you're on fuel oil, then your payback or your recouping costs are a little shorter.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. So, of the systems that are in, what are they? I mean, what do they look like?
Well, the geothermal systems that are in Alaska are ground source heat pumps, and there's about 50 to 60 of those installed in the state. And they look just like a box that buzzes, just like your refrigerator, and they actually operate just like your refrigerator does, except your refrigerator is air to fluid heat pump, and these are ground source heat pumps that take fluid out of the ground, or the ground temperature at a constant, and then which is somewhere around 40 degrees. And then they actually boil off that through a refrigerant-type heat exchanger and actually develop heat from that to heat your home. It's a fairly simple process, and it's as reliable as your refrigerator once you get it stabilized and installed.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there are, like my refrigerator, there are some that are more reliable than others.
I'm sure that, there's certain, lots of different manufacturers out there. This is very popular technology down in the States, in the cooling climates, but it does work very well in the heating climates. It just hasn't caught on yet, so to speak.
Michael, are you getting more and more people asking about this type of thing when you're talking to people about weatherization?
We have a lot of people talking about, higher efficiency furnaces, mm-hmm. but there aren't very many people. We go out and see a few people that are looking for things like on-demand hot water heaters, and they're not sure they'll work for them and questions like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't had anyone ask about a geothermal.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that on-demand water heater, because we did have an email question about that. And let's see, Michael wants to know, he had his home receive an energy audit recently, and he was recommended to purchase an on-demand water heater. And let's see, we generally use hot water for two or more uses at the same time. Currently, we have a gas water heater that is less than 5 years old. Our supply of water comes from a well where the groundwater is about 35 degrees. I've been hearing mixed reviews from reports and people, like Consumer Reports and people who sell on-demand heaters. His question, the temperature of our well water, put on your thinking caps now, is 35 degrees, and it needs to be heated to, say, 110 degrees. We live in Palmer, where the winter temperatures can be well below freezing. Are there savings / ease of utility to using an on-demand heater that would offset the cost of installing and using one versus the current water heater we have? Raise your hand!
Well, I think we both actually have lived with one of these type of systems, Mike and I both, so go ahead, Mike.
I think the situation you have to look at is you have to look at the amount of water you're using. He's saying that he's using two sources at the same time. You can't go out and buy a run-of-the-mill $600 unit and expect it to heat mm-hmm. that much water at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have either two of them, or you have to have a little better unit,
yeah.
and it's going to cost you money. So it just depends on the outlay of money. If you want to, spend that money up front, you're not heating water all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're heating it as you use it.
And Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
You said you're familiar with the on-demand?
Yeah, I actually lived in a home with an on-demand water heater, and it was very comfortable. There's some getting used to these piece of equipment. It took about 30 seconds for that to stabilize once I got into a shower.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody was turning on another faucet, it was fine. It didn't disrupt it. You want to buy a unit that's got a capability of about 6 gallons per minute or more
mm-hmm.
of output. And, the other thing is the sealed combustion part of it, it makes it a little more efficient if you can find a sealed combustion unit. And they're the most common unit. They work just fine. As far as I'm concerned, there are a lot of mechanical contractors that don't seem to think that they're a good option. one of the best options for heating hot water. You know, whenever I get a home that, when I do an energy rating on a home that has a furnace and they want to do a better hot water scenario, I'll always recommend the on-demand water heater.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have a boiler, then I'll recommend the sidearm water heater or the type of water heater that is a companion to the boiler, because that's a little more efficient than the on-demand.
Mm-hmm. Michael, did you want to add anything to what Chuck had to say?
No, I think he's right on target there. I've had an on-demand in my house for about 15 years, and it works reasonably well, but for the most part, you don't have two things going at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's a really old one, and it's designed to put out 3 gallon a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, if you have more than two people living in the house, is there an on-demand that would?
Oh yeah, there are several on-demands that produce upwards of 9 gallon a minute.
So 9 gallon would do well for washing, showering.
Yeah, if you have two and a half gallon a minute flow on your shower. Theoretically, you could take 3 showers at the same time.
Okay. That sounds pretty good to me. Well, I wanted to talk about energy ratings. I'll just remind our listeners real quick. This is a live call-in program if you're listening in the afternoon. And if you have questions or comments about weatherization, give us a call. We have two experts here. Our number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or toll-free, it's 1-888-353-5752. And my guests today are from the municipality of Anchorage, Michael Packard is Housing Rehabilitation Coordinator, and Chuck Renfro is the Executive Director and President of the Alaska Craftsman Home Program, and they're very involved in weatherization issues here in our community. And by the way, I think I just searched Weatherization Alaska, or maybe even Anchorage on the internet, and got both of these fine gentlemen, but there are other resources that are also available. What is an energy rating? When I go out to purchase a home and I see, a home is 4-star or 5-star, what's the difference, Chuck, in that? And how do I know if it's really accurate?
Well, an energy rating is basically on a point scale. It's based on a point scale from 1 to 100. And the higher point value you have on an energy rating, the more efficient your home is.
Mm-hmm.
So 73 points, I believe, is a 4-star plus home. I may be wrong on that. 78 points, I believe, is a 4-star plus home. Nope, I'm wrong again. I should have brought some notes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Well, anyway.
It's 83 points, I think, is a 4-star plus home.
Okay.
Sorry about that. But the higher point value you have, the more energy efficient your home is. And it's fairly accurate information. It's based on a computer program called ACWARM. That was developed for Alaska, mm-hmm. in Alaska, by Alaskans. And that's actually currently going through another rewrite or an upgrade, which is going to make it that much better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fairly comprehensive program that tells you how energy efficient your home is.
And what's a 5-star? I mean, is that common? I don't see anything larger than a 5-star, or better, or bigger.
Well, it's just that there's another 5 points. There's mm-hmm. about 5 points in between the levels when you get up into the above 3-star level,
mm-hmm.
and it's just that many more points. The qualifier there is that the ventilation is a very key part of that. When you get an airtight home with without proper ventilation, then you can run into problems.
Mm-hmm.
Another key part of that is sealed combustion direct vent heating equipment. Because that, you get into the higher efficiency homes, that type of equipment needs to be in there just for safety, to eliminate mm-hmm. the carbon monoxide issues that Alaska is famous for.
Yeah.
And those sorts of issues.
And when you say sealed combustion, you mean there's some way to provide air to your furnace mm-hmm. outside of just air from the environment?
Yeah, sealed combustion direct vent equipment is basically a combustion air, which is you can't have a heating appliance without combustion air.
Mm-hmm.
So the combustion air in a sealed combustion unit is brought to the unit directly through a sealed pipe into the fire chamber, and then the products of combustion are exhausted out of the house through another seal pipe. So there's you have to have two pipes. And you know, it's an engineered balanced system. A lot of different manufacturers make this equipment now. And at some point, I believe that's what we're going to have as a normal heating system, as opposed to the boiler or the furnace where you could reach down and touch the flame with your finger.
Mm-hmm.
That's what can be out of balance and, you know, have combustion air issues and, you know, can get downright dangerous to operate in your home.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what is a blower test? And
I think you're talking about a blower door test.
Blowed. Okay, let's start over. What is it?
It's a test that we perform on a house. We put a large fan in the door. There's a framework that goes in the door with a skirt over the top of it, and you have a manometer, and you're testing the amount of airflow in the house. So you can turn the fan on, and you're testing between the inside and the outside of the house for pressure. And you can turn the fan on, and when you're blowing air out of the house, it's going to come in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And what the blower door does is it measures the amount of air that's coming in through those leaks.
And is this a test that you perform when you're doing your assessment of a home?
Yes.
On mm-hmm. every door?
On
every outside
every
door?
Every house.
No, every house. One door.
One door.
One door on every house.
Okay.
You're blowing the air out of the entire house with the fan.
Wow. Is that like really huge? I mean, how long does it take? Like if you have a 2,000 square foot house.
It takes about the same for every house. We do several tests when we do ours.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put a negative pressure on the house, but we also test all the ducts, see if there's any leakage if you have a forced air furnace.
Mm-hmm.
We're checking to see if there's leaks in the duct system. We're checking to see if there's a backdraft potential. If there's not enough air coming in that house, then it's quite possible that you have problems with backdrafting.
Mm. Okay. So that would be something that's really good to know.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make light of it. Okay, you're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today it is a live call-in program. If you're listening in the afternoon, we're talking about weatherization. Our local number is 550-8433. Don on line 6. Welcome to the show. Hello, Don.
Hello. Yes, I wanted to ask about a building codes approach to all of these questions. I'm asking because about 25 years ago, I was living in Juneau, watching the Juneau City Assembly on TV deal with a motion to add a building codes about residential housing that would require like a certain percentage of the windows be facing the sun, and that a certain percent of the area of the house of the residence be in windows, and that a certain minimum R factor be involved in the building. And I just wonder if that's a strategy you think that is worth considering. Okay. I'll hang up and listen.
Let's go to Chuck for that one for now.
Well, the building codes really, in some respects actually address, you know, minimum thermal standards. Alaska has what they call the Building Energy Efficiency Standard. That has minimum thermal requirements, and you know, that sort of thing. The only thing that I don't believe the codes would address would be the thermal standards, the amount of south facing glass. I mean, it's certainly mm-hmm. good to have more south facing glass, but I don't think there's any requirement building code wise. Any of the programs that we do, we adhere to building codes. We don't try to absorb building codes or make anything. Building codes are a minimum standard, so we try to encourage folks to go above that standard.
Are there building codes in all of South Central Alaska?
There's a statewide building code
mm-hmm.
That if you have a home that is financed through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, that you have to comply with that particular building code. I think it's the 2000... International Residential Code at this time still.
2006, yeah.
2006, it's a 2006 Energy Code, and then that's you know part of the.
And do we have a state building code or?
Yeah, there's a statewide building code through the through the BEES standard, mm-hmm. and it's for our thermal standards or the building energy efficiency standard. Yeah, and that's the 2006 International Energy Code,
okay.
IECC, and which part of that is the ASHRAE 60 to 2004, mm-hmm. the ventilation standard is part of that as well.
Because someone had told me, or I heard, that there are no building codes like in the Valley or something like that.
If you're building with financing through Alaska Housing, then you do have to comply to that building code.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have conventional financing at this point in time, there's nothing that compels you to do that.
Okay, Nathan on line 9, welcome to the show.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
We just bought our home about 8 months ago, and it wasn't a new home. It was a 70s build, and we had a boiler. And basically, because we had the boiler and the hot water pipes throughout the house, we decided to go with a new boiler and an indirect-fired water heater. So we did the energy rebate program. And, you know, it was very painless. The energy rater gave us a lot of tips on what we could do, and we replaced the boiler and got a new hot water heater, like I said, through the indirect fire, and it works great for us. And I just wanted to tell anybody out there that's thinking about doing the energy rebate program to definitely go ahead and do it, because it's great for Alaska.
Well, look at that.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's see, line 3, Lido?
Yes, ma'am. I have a question about my window. And like every morning when I woke up and there's a water on the glass and the window, like about 3 to 4 inches, it's like a precipitation. I don't know what's wrong with that. Can you give me a good explanation?
Mm-hmm. How about Michael?
More than likely it's a single pane window. There's probably a lot of humidity in the house. The glass is definitely the lowest insulated item in your whole wall, and so that's the cold spot. And so the dew point is close to that window, and so
all the windows on my master's bedroom is like that.
Are they single pane?
Any solution for that matter?
Well, you can get rid of some of the excess moisture that's in the air by running a bath fan.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for your call. Let's see, line 1, Susie. Welcome to the show. Hello, Susie.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
That's okay.
I was just wondering, as a homeowner, is there any way I can find out information about what makes my home work? Or info about my home? Is there any information available?
Michael.
There's a lot of information. You can go to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. They have a giant resource library that just has a ton of stuff.
And, Chuck, and let's also talk a little bit about some of the seminars that you're offering in the community right now.
I can talk about that. We actually, Alaska Housing has sponsored us to do consumer education courses for every night except for Friday from 7 to 9 every day. And we have that. We have different subjects every night. We'll come on and give maybe an insulation, which I think tonight is actually insulation. And we do a two-hour course every night for consumer education. And there's no charge, and it's sponsored by Alaska Housing, and we get a pretty good response to that.
And I think the notices are in the paper and on your website, is that right?
Yes, on our website. It's in the we have it in the, I think, community forum. In the newspaper, we're trying to get the word out to folks in any way we can. NSTAR was going to put a flyer in their bill for us.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, at this time, it's just for Anchorage.
Yeah.
But, it's certainly a good program, and it gets a lot of positive feedback from folks.
Mm-hmm. And, Michael, I guess you're the guy that would be coming out doing the assessment, or do you have, like...
There's four of us now.
Uh-huh. So when someone calls up and says, I filled out my paperwork, I've been approved, send someone to my house, how long could that possibly take?
Well, it could take anywhere from 18 months to 2 years.
To get an assessment?
Right, because we have a waiting list now that's, mm-hmm. that's quite large. And so what happens is you'll fill out all your paperwork, and the person at the front desk in the office will say, yeah, everything is here, and based on your priority, this is, you know, you're going to go on the list, and as your name comes up, when your name gets to the top, we're going to call you and say, it's time for the audit. So, you know, you set up the appointment at that time.
Mm-hmm. Sounds kind of like the small boat harbors.
Yes, that's true.
You could sell your spot on the waiting list. Do a lot of people just give up, or, I mean, does some...
I'm sure some people have, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that don't have the money to do the improvements that we can do for them.
So
they'll wait as long as it takes.
Mm-hmm. Chuck, are there certain places that people can go to find a lot of information about things like geothermal, gas, oil, heat, you know, efficiencies? I know there's Consumer Reports, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, in Alaska, we have the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. They have an energy library.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also in Alaska something called the Coal Climate Housing Research Center, and I'm associated with them. And we do actual studies on products and processes to make sure that it's what we call Alaska tough, and it'll work in Alaska, different items.
Mm-hmm.
And they do different types of, and sponsor different types of studies for that sort of thing as well.
Are these like furnaces or boilers?
Right now they're testing they're in Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
and we have a testing center up there. And they're testing pellet stoves, they're testing wood-fired boilers, wood-fired furnaces, and that sort of thing. Any type of equipment that needs to be submitted for testing, you'll verify it.
It seems like we heard more about these things 10 years ago. It doesn't seem like people talk about pellet-fired stoves and things like that as much anymore. Or am I just maybe in a different place?
Well, no one... manufactures pellets in Alaska, so you have to import your pellets. So mm-hmm. that's, you know, makes it a little more expensive to operate. But there's an anticipation. I think in Delta, somebody was going to start manufacturing pellets and that sort of thing.
Hmm.
You know, wood burning is not so prevalent in Anchorage, up in the interior,
yeah.
and up in Fairbanks. That's where wood burning is more of an issue up there.
Mm-hmm. Michael, anybody using unusual heating that you've seen in the Muni outside of, you know, just your regular gas?
Oh, there's several gas furnaces. There's some combinations that are domestic as well as heating water, so they're a one-style unit.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I haven't seen a whole lot that's new or different.
Mm-hmm.
We have high-efficiency boilers and furnaces.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that when we bought our house, it was much newer than it is now. But the furnace had one of those energy rating things on it, and it mm-hmm. was, the mark was pretty far to the left, which is not good. And I think I can't remember if it said why. But it was not very efficient. And why would somebody, well, of course we bought the house. I mean, that didn't scare us. But why would someone, you know, buy a house that had something that said that on the furnace? I mean, should you, like, say I want a different furnace?
Well, that's always a possibility. I mean, everything is negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as the technology has improved, the efficiency has improved. I mean, you can take a look at the automobile for a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the furnaces are the same way. You know, when fuel was cheap, it really didn't matter how efficient it was. Now the fuel's gotten more expensive. Now people are out there buying more fuel-efficient furnaces.
Mm-hmm.
And as the demand increases, so will the supply.
Mm-hmm. If you have about a 2,000-square-foot home here in Anchorage, within city limits, how much can you expect to pay for a new furnace, like if you were just going to plug in a new furnace to an air, you know, your vents without a whole bunch of, you know, finagling. Is it like
anywhere? Oh, yeah. Anywhere from, you know, $3,000 to $6,000, $7,000.
Mm-hmm. And even higher, actually, yeah.
It just depends on the, you know, the size of the furnace and how efficient it is.
So it's something people should probably, I think when you go to those HFC classes, one of the things that they say is homeowners should always set aside money because you'll have a major disaster. You never know when it's going to happen, but it will happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. It usually happens in the middle of the night in the coldest part of the winter. And the reason for that is the furnace is working very hard at that time. You know, it's working the hardest that it has to work. Mm-hmm. So naturally it's going to break when you're overtaxing it.
Yeah. My refrigerator always breaks right around the holidays or something like that. Chuck, you said that you work in industry and you do some things on your own. Are there other, mm-hmm. As far as the Alaska Craftsman Program, are there other companies that work with your group?
Well, we have a registry of builders that are past students, I guess you could say, and they're associated with us. These are folks that are dedicated to high efficiency, making energy efficient housing, and getting a house to work as a system is what we call it. Getting your house in balance, getting heat, air, and moisture to work together to make your home appropriate. So, those types of folks, we have a group of people that have dedicated themselves to that, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And, Michael, are there people out there that do assessments in the private sector?
There are a lot of energy auditors out there.
Mm-hmm. How do you find them? You look up energy auditor?
As far as I know, all of them have a very long waiting list as well. Mm-hmm. But, I'm sure that Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has the list of energy raters.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, how do you go about getting an application for the rebate program? Is it available on your website or do you go to some office? Or?
Well, as of last month, you just call. AK Rebate, and I believe that's it. You can call through Alaska Housing anyway, and you put your name on a list, and they have a central list that if you want to get participate in the rebate program, you'll put your name on that list, and then just wait till you get a call from your reader.
And weatherization?
Weatherization, you can either go on the website, the municipality website, muni.org, or you can go down to the office.
Cross your fingers and hang on for dear life.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you for joining us today. Thank both of you. I know you're very busy, and my generous hour of your time probably held off part of someone's energy assessment. But thank you both for being here today, Chuck Renfro and Michael Packard. And I hope you'll come back again.
Thank you.
Have a good week out there.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us. KSKA, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Or email us at communityforum@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.